Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. You can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And hey, if you guys enjoy what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a huge favor. Follow us, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you could please subscribe to us, maybe leave us a review if you've got the time to write one, maybe drop us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. And last but not least, please share the podcast on whatever platform you listen to it on. If you follow us on Twitter, share it there. If you follow us on Facebook, share it there. I would sincerely appreciate it. Now, for today's show, I am joined by one half of Clutch City Sunday from Sports Talk 790, Mr. Brian LaLima. How are you doing today, Brian?
Good, man. I'm glad to finally be a part of a Locked On Rockets podcast.
You're going to give me hell about taking so long to get you on?
Absolutely, 100%. If I don't, I think I would be failing you as a team member. So, because we're the three best friends that anyone could have, right?
That is very true. The third best friend has been on the podcast before a while back, right around the time that the... What was it on Reddit? Somebody analyzed James Harden's performances and based on the strip clubs that he visited in each city. Yeah, it was right after that came out on Reddit that Michael joined the podcast. So that was a really fun episode.
What a statistic that is.
It really is. And, you know, the guy did some hard-hitting analysis. You know, there were some serious numbers there.
Now, it's a little different for me. I'm not big on the strip clubs.
So okay, all right, well, there we go.
I'm not going to...
Wait. Does that mean Michael is big on strip clubs?
Do we need to talk to Sabrina? I don't think Michael's big on much because he's not big on math. He's not big on using fancy words. I mean, we can go on and on and on, but I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think he's a big guy, big strip club guy.
Okay. Well, that much is true. We know his issues with numbers. Now, Brian, let me start off with this. Right, first off, you know, we are in this point in time where it's, you know, there's not really a lot going on with the Rockets. It's, you know, middle of All-Star break. As we record this on a Sunday afternoon, which I'm not sure if this shows, you know what, I'm just going to post this later tonight, whatever. I don't want it to be too dated. So as we're recording this, you know, Sunday afternoon, there's not really any immediate relevant news for the Rockets other than James Harden and Russell Westbrook are teammates in the All-Star game, which, quick pop quiz, do you remember the last All-Star teammate James Harden had?
No, I do not. I'm not even going to try to act like it.
Okay, no worries. So James Harden has only ever had one All-Star teammate. And that was Dwight Howard in his first year on the Rockets.
So back in 2013?
Yeah, that was the one year that he had an All-Star team. Now, you can make the argument that 17-18 CP3 should have been an All-Star, but, you know, he missed the first 20 games of the season, so there wasn't really a case to get him onto the All-Star squad that year. His performance could have merited it in the, you know, small amount of time that he did play, but it just, you know, he wasn't popular enough that season to make a cut. So... this is going to be his first year, and I know All-Star Game is kind of like a popularity contest a little bit, but it does carry some weight because when you have a player who's good enough to make the All-Star squad, it usually means that player is, you know, a big factor in what's going on the court, and Russell Westbrook has been exactly that so far this year, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would definitely say that, and we talked about it on our Sunday show on Clutch City Sunday that wouldn't you say he's probably one of the best guards in the Western Conference? We talked about Damian Lillard would be up there with him, but who else besides them?
It's really got to be those three. I mean, Steph's been out the entire year with the hand injury, and you can make an argument that Chris Paul this season has, you know, kind of maybe found the fountain of youth a little bit. I heard he went vegan this last offseason or something, and so that's probably helped contribute a little bit with his diet and kind of, you know, maybe he's slimmed down just a little bit, and so that's why he's been able to play in every single game so far this year. But Westbrook has easily been the second or third best guard, at least in the West, maybe... in the entire NBA, that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely a stretch. The Eastern Conference has some pretty good guards.
Stop your head. Go.
Man. Would you consider Ben Simmons a point guard?
I would not. I consider him a forward. He's a point forward.
Point forward, so Kemba Walker's pretty good.
I'd say Westbrook is above Kemba right now.
Right now?
Right now, okay. Yeah.
Well, the way that Russell Westbrook's been playing, especially right before the All-Star break, yeah, I would say considering him one of the best guards in the entire NBA is not a stretch.
Which is funny considering he's basically the Rockets' center now, at least offensively, the way that he plays. He is your de facto center. He scores all the points in the paint. He posts up. He does everything a traditional center would do in the offense. He even faces up from about the free throw line. You know, that's where he starts most of his moves from. He kind of has that little like lullaby dribble to get his defender, you know, to back down just a little bit. And then he faces up and drives in. And he's been largely unstoppable. And obviously, the biggest piece of Rockets news is the trade deadline, dealing Clint Capela to really go all in with Rockets small ball. How did you feel about the deal?
I like it. I think just with Clint Capela being the type of center, you know, with the pick and roll, we saw with him and Chris Paul and then also with James Harden a couple years ago, the pick and roll was money. I mean, it was unstoppable at times. But it seems like with this isolation basketball, the pick and roll has gone away. So if you can go out and get rid of him and bring in a couple of pieces that's going to help your basketball team to fit the offense that they're trying to go for, I was all about it. Now, can they make it work? Can obviously, the chemistry between James Harden and Russell Westbrook being on the floor at the same time is going to continue to grow. Now you throw in Robert Covington, who was a great pickup. I didn't even know who he was, I'll be honest with you. I didn't know a lot about him, but what I've seen has been great. Now, can they put it all together and ride the momentum all the way through the second half? That's going to be my biggest question, the chemistry on the floor with the small ball lineup. We can talk, you know, in detail about how are they going to match up with other teams later on down in the season. You know, obviously the Lakers come to mind. They're a big team as far as height-wise. How is that going to help? But I think now what they need to do is just get the chemistry on the floor first as a team and continue to move forward. So I was a big fan of it. I like it. I think, you know, the quicker the offense, the more sped up, more speed, you know, you speed up the offense a little bit more, the better it's going to benefit the Rockets in you know, as a team.
And one area that we've kind of seen discussed a little bit, or not a little bit, a lot of it actually, is there's a lot of people questioning how the Rockets are going to be able to defend some of the bigger teams in the league. And I'm not really afraid of a lot of the bigs out there. I mean, you go down the line. Obviously, Anthony Davis, you know, he's the most, we'll call him the best offensive big in the league. And then past that, the Clippers don't really have anybody. Yeah, you've got Montrezl Harrell, but he's not exactly, you know, he's not exactly a big that is going to, I don't know, dominate you?
He's not going to dominate you.
No, he can go, he can have a couple good games here or there, but I don't see him.
Streaky, I feel like.
There we go. He's a streaky version of a big. We'll go with that. And then past that, I mean, what, Rudy Gobert? Like, he has zero offensive game whatsoever. And then just keep going down the line, and I just don't see any bigs that really worry me from a Rockets perspective. Now, you get out east, and that becomes a little bit of a different question with guys like Embiid, and then you've got the Bucks, who they maybe don't have, you know, a traditional center that's going to torch you, but they have a huge team, a lot of length, a lot of athleticism. But I think one area that needs more focus is, who is going to guard this Rockets system? Who is going to be able to guard Russell Westbrook in space? I mean, just looking at his numbers from the 2020 calendar year. So the very first game played against Philadelphia, was it in 2020? Yeah, on January 3rd. So all the way back from that game until the most recent game where they won against Boston here in Houston. That's 15 games for Westbrook. He is averaging, do you want to take a guess at his averages?
Points? Let's go points. 36?
A little bit less. But you're pretty close.
He's in the 30s, though, right?
He's 33 points per game. I mean, 33 points per game, 8 rebounds a game, 7 assists per game, almost 2 steals per game. His averages are through the roof. He's reduced the amount of three-pointers he's shooting, which has been a huge part of his success so far. He's down to just 2.3 three-point attempts during that basically almost two-month stretch. He completely reinvented his game, and I didn't think that was possible.
And, like, you know, the thing when they acquired him in the trade was how is he going to fit in the offense? He can't shoot the three ball. We know that his 3-point percentage is not very good. So how is he going to fit? How is he going to make that offense work with James Harden, with Clint Capela? You have PJ in the corner. I think the best thing the Rockets have done is they've changed their offense to fit Russell Westbrook and James Harden at the same time, or on the court at the same time. High energy, work the basketball, get up and down the floor, and then if you want to bring in the isolation basketball, you can still do that. But I just feel like, and it could be just me. I mean, I would love to get your opinion on it, but I just feel like the Rockets have switched up their offensive style to make that work instead of trying to have Russell change his game to make his game fit the Rockets style of shoot and, you know, live and die by the three, isolation basketball. Does that make sense, or am I just talking?
No, that makes perfect sense. And I actually have a sort of I want to build on that, but we'll do that right after we hit this very first break. I forgot to start my timer, but something tells me, my internal podcast timer tells me that I'm supposed to be hitting a break right about now. So we're going to hit this break really quick. And when we come back, I'm going to kind of build on that. And then I have a question for you regarding the Rockets offense. So we'll get there in just 1 second with Brian Lima from Sports Talk 790 from Clutch City Sunday. You can catch that show every Sunday, 11 to 1 on Sports Talk 790, the official flagship station for your Houston Rockets. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Brian Lima from Sports Talk 790. And Brian kind of hit me with this interesting question and made an interesting point at the end of the last segment and talking about how the Rockets have now adapted to Russell Westbrook versus making him adapt to the Rocket system. And I think that there was a little bit of that earlier this season. And what I mean by that is there was obviously a point being made to Russell Westbrook to allow him to shoot three-pointers earlier this season. His three-pointer volume was a lot higher, and I don't have those specific numbers in front of me right now, but the eye test tells you that Russell Westbrook was shooting a lot more three-pointers earlier this season. And there were even interviews with D'Antoni where they gave him the green light. They wanted him to shoot those wide-open threes because they assumed that on slightly bigger volume and when they were wide open, these kind of like set-shot three-pointers just off in the corner or whatever, you know, based on the Rockets' offense and the volume of threes that they get, they hoped that his percentage would get back up to at least maybe his MVP level percentage, which was about 35%. Not phenomenal, but passable in the Rocket system. Now, they have since shied away from that, and they really embodied this new style where they have cut down on his threes, and that's kind of, it's a two-part thing. It's not just the Rockets organization, it's also Westbrook deciding that, hey, I realize what my strengths are, and this Rocket system, this space allows me to flourish at what I'm good at. Now, here's the question, and I've seen this proposed on social media, and I really can't make heads or tails of this, so let's get your opinion on it, Brian. Do you think Russell Westbrook's success in this system is preventing James Harden from being successful anymore? Because James had arguably the worst stretch of his career at the same time that Russ is having one of the best stretches of his career.
That is a tough one.
Right?
My gut, like my first reaction is yes. And I'm sure we can dig into the statistics and we can dig into each other's opinions and everybody else's. And I could probably sit there and say no at some point. But just off the top of my head, yeah, I feel like the more that Russ thrives in this system, it definitely, James Harden isn't the same James Harden. We're not going to see the same James Harden, I feel like. And what I mean by that is, when CP3 was the point guard for the Rockets, what did you have? You had him and James Harden at the same time. Obviously, one would bring up the basketball. It didn't matter. Most of the time, it got back to James Harden. He'd work the shot clock all the way down to like 8 seconds, and then he would make the isolation move, go for the three, try to drive in. Now, you don't see that. You see Russ trying to push the basketball. The energy is higher. The spacing is more. So to go back to your question, do I feel like it's... Oh, man, is it making him worse?
Maybe that's a bit too strong. Maybe saying it's making him worse, maybe it's just the system is now wholly built around Russell Westbrook as opposed to being built around James Harden's strengths.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's – I don't know if it's going to make it worse. It's just going to be different. And I think everybody kind of knew that coming into this, bringing in Russell Westbrook where, again, like we go back, he's not a good three-point shooter. It is what it is. So how's he going to fit into the Rocket system? Well – they've made a change. Now we're making the Rocket system about Russell Westbrook. But I think, and then here's a good thing, Russ and Harden's relationship is they're very tight-knit. They go way, way back, right? So you just got to figure it out. You just have to adapt, I think. And it's going to come down to, is James Harden going to want to do that?
Do we think he's capable of it? Do we think he's capable, the ISO god James Harden, yeah. Do we think he is capable of accepting, maybe not necessarily a lesser role, but...
You could make the argument that it is a lesser role, though.
And you're right. You could make the argument that it is a lesser role. But for this system to work, for Russ to be as ball dominant as he needs to be successful, to be a high volume scorer in this new system, James is going to have to play off ball a little bit, which we've seen in the past he doesn't necessarily like to do.
No, he doesn't like to do it. But I've wanted him to be off the ball for a while now. I thought the system with Chris Paul could have worked more if they pushed the basketball like they're doing now. Obviously, you got a more youthful Russell Westbrook, but yeah, he's going to have to accept this role. I mean, it's when you got both of those guys scoring more than 30 points a game, both of them together. I mean, you're compiling 60 or more points with just them two, and then if you've got PJ Tucker scoring 10 to 12 points, you've got Robert Covington knocking down some threes. Who am I missing here?
Eric Gordon.
There you go. That's your X factor to me. How productive is he going to be in this system? And we've seen it. He's had a couple games where he's, you know, gone streaky and knocked down 30, 40. I think he had a 50-point game at one point, right?
50-point burger against Utah, yeah.
When Harden was out, Russ was out, sitting due to rest, things like that. So, yeah, I think it's going to come down to can James Harden or will James Harden accept, I'm just going to call it what it is, a lesser role to an extent. I mean, we're so used to the isolation basketball. Like you said ISO God, right? James Harden?
Yeah, he's the best. I mean, but the all the numbers point to him being the best isolation player in NBA history. Nobody comes close to his numbers.
He is probably one of the most dynamic scorers we've ever seen.
And probably will ever see. I mean, obviously the game is constantly evolving and changing, but when you look at just the number of ways that he can score. Now, obviously, we're talking about the isolation from him, right? I think that the isolation, in a way, makes him a bit too predictable.
Yes.
And I think it was in the, who was it? It was Kobe Bryant and maybe T-Mac was in this interview too. But Kobe gave...
with Rachel Nichols?
Yes.
Yes, both of them.
Yeah. And Kobe gave this great explanation of how the way that James Harden plays, it's really hard to play that style because you constantly have him, then the defense, then the basket. And so constantly he's going downhill into against the defense, playing this face-up style of isolation basketball makes it really, he's not getting easy buckets. When do you ever see James Harden get an easy bucket?
You don't.
Doesn't happen. Yeah. He works so hard for every single bucket that he gets. And so I think that him playing off ball, whatever, you know, mental barrier he has or whatever personal issues he has with playing off ball, if he can get past those, we see it in little spurts. We see it in spurts where Russ has the ball, he's handling, he drives in, or, you know, the ball movement starts, you know, ball starts moving around the perimeter for the Rockets, and then suddenly James does get a wide open shot. And it seems to me, and I've mentioned this before on the pod, that he's almost worked himself into a mentality where he has to dribble the ball before he shoots it. I'm sure you've seen it. There are times where James has a wide open shot and he opts to take a rhythm dribble first.
He's not a catch and shoot guy.
He's just not anymore. And that's so weird because that's exactly what he thrived at with OKC his first 3 years in the league. He was that sixth man catch and shoot instant offense off the bench. Everything that you would imagine or think about in a sixth man.
Yeah. And then he comes to Houston and it becomes his team. And then the isolation basketball is never going to win you a championship. I don't care what anybody says. It's not going to work. And I think it's been proven. It's been proven over the last couple years that with the way that the offense has been going, I mean, regular season, you put up phenomenal numbers. You go on this crazy run of 30 and 35-plus games, 30-point games. But then you get in the playoffs, and it's proven to not work, to not get you past, you know, the Western Conference Finals 1 year, what they lose in the semifinals the last 2 years, right?
It was Western Conference Finals, 17-18, Game 7 to the Warriors, and then last year it was six games to the Warriors in the semifinals, yeah.
I think James Harden needs to adapt to this style of offense, and it's just going to benefit everybody else.
You know, and I felt this way back when the team still had CP3, and I still feel this way right now, is that isolation ball can work in spurts, but it shouldn't ever be your go-to offense. And I say that because, and I want to use, regrettably, I'm going to use the Golden State Warriors as an example. But the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant, isolation ball wasn't really ever their go-to. Now, they would, you know, they would default to it like at the end of a shot clock, you know, 7 to 10 seconds left. They've already run a couple plays. There's nothing there that, you know, they've had multiple actions and there's just no open shot. So, yeah, it's a great bailout play to toss the ball down to 7 foot tall Kevin Durant, who can shoot over anybody from, you know, greater than 50% from mid range. That's an amazing backup plan in your offense. I feel like that's what the Rockets could be doing with James, where they can look to get other people involved on the roster rather than immediately going to James Harden, the isolation, the step backs, and frankly, you know, some really poor shooting performances over the last month and a half.
Yeah, and I don't think teams are going to even let them get into isolation. I mean, you saw what the Lakers did. That was the eye-opening thing that I saw when they were playing the Lakers a couple nights ago. As soon as he hit half court, they doubled him.
The double teams are...
And I think that's going to come more often as the season goes on in the second half.
That is an interesting wrinkle that we need to give a little bit more thought to as far as James Harden's, you know, quote unquote struggles. We say he's struggling. His James Harden's version of struggling would be like career highs for some other players. So, you know, obviously we are, you know, nitpicking here because we've been spoiled by the greatness of James Harden for the last, you know, however many years. But
yeah, when you look at James Harden's number and he's averaging, you know, 40 points or whatever it is. And
he's at 35.3 for the season because he's been struggling, which is still insane to think about.
Exactly. So that's what we're definitely spoiled by what we're used to from James Harden, 38, 39, 40 average points. Now he's down to 35. And, you know, we're sitting here talking about he's struggling. That's just how good he is and has been. I think if you can get if you can get Russell Westbrook averaging, what was he, 36?
33 a game.
I'm sorry. I thought it was 36. So he's at 33. If you can get those guys 33 to 35 each, what's the problem here?
Yeah, I mean, they've already posted the highest score. They're the highest scoring duo since like Kobe and Shaq or something ridiculous like that. And anytime you're mentioned in a conversation with guys who, you know, three-peated, you're doing something right. So as far as this Rockets team is concerned, they traded Clint Capella midseason. They did a huge shakeup. I was a big fan of it. You already said you're a big fan of it. Do you think that their championship odds are better after this move?
To be honest with you, when they started the season and the way that they were playing early on, I didn't think their championship odds were very good anyways. So to make this move and to see the way that they have played over the last couple games, I would say they increased a little bit. It's going to be, and you already talked about it, the Lakers are the favorite in the West. They've got the link. They've got LeBron James. They've got some guys that are playing. Dwight Howard has had a pretty good year.
He's having a bit of a resurgence, yeah.
So that's where the championship's going to go, or the Western Conference championship is going to go through the Lakers.
You don't think it's going through the Clippers?
They're not playing very well right now.
I mean, Paul George has definitely been struggling, and that's a story in and of itself that Paul George, you know, not enough people are talking about. He's having a down year.
Yeah, so they don't scare me like the Lakers do. Just because of the length, and Anthony Davis is a freak. Obviously, LeBron James is LeBron James. So to go back to the Rockets championship odds, I think they did get better. I was concerned with them not making a move to try to get some kind of center. I guess they'll rely on Tyson Chandler and Isaiah Hartenstein. Hartenstein's going to have to play at some point.
I mean, or not, because here's the thing. They have Bruno Caboclo. Caboclo, there we go.
Okay, I forgot about Caboclo.
It always tongue-ties me. Now, he was recovering from, I want to say it was a hip injury. I don't have it right in front of me, unfortunately. I'm so sorry. I didn't prep this show as much as I normally do. I am failing all of my listeners. But he was coming back from some type of a minor injury, and you know, getting him back will be really interesting because, again, he's a guy 6'9", has a lot of length, can shoot the three ball. He can be a really true blue small ball center, you know, almost in line with what I would have hoped that Gary Clark could have turned into for this Rockets team. And based on exactly what happened with Daryl Morey this past trade deadline, having to trade away your starting center and assets to get back to former Rockets, you said you didn't know where Robert Covington was from or much about him. He was a former Rocket.
Well, I knew he was a former Rocket, but other than that, I didn't hear anything
much
about him. Yeah,
you know, for a guy like that to, you know, have to trade your assets to get a guy back. And then same thing for Bruno. He was a Rocket just two seasons ago. And
didn't know that either.
You know, there's the joke about, you know, him being 2 years away from being 2 years away. Well, that 2 years away from being 2 years away is now, I think. In this Rockets small ball system, I think he has the chance to thrive. And it'll be interesting to see how he gets folded into the team once he returns. So we got to hit this final break, and we'll be back with our final segment here at Locked On Rockets in just 1 second. So you guys sit tight. Don't go anywhere. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Chatting right now with Brian Lima from Clutch City Sundays. Can't butcher that. All right. Well, do I keep this? Do I cut it? Do I keep
Probably
it?
Probably cut it.
Cut it.
Yeah, I cut
All
it.
All right. Cut it. All right.
Sam from Sports Talk. Yeah. Sports Talk 790 and also on
Clutch City Sunday. Yeah, I did it backwards. 3, 2, 1. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Chatting with Brian Lima from Sports Talk 790. You can catch him every Sunday from 11 to 1 p.m. on Clutch City Sunday, a show that I was formerly a member of. I did my last show right before we recorded this podcast, so that kind of hurts. But don't worry, I will be back stronger than ever. Strike me down and I shall grow more powerful than you can ever imagine. Are you a Star Wars guy or no?
Not even close.
Oh, man, that is a great Star Wars line from the great Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I'm sad that you can't catch that reference. Hopefully some listeners will appreciate that reference. So really quickly, we do have a bit of news that did come out. And I don't know if it's necessarily hard-hitting news from the All-Star break, but Chris Paul, during his All-Star interviews, was being asked about PJ Tucker. And Chris Paul was very vocal about the fact that the Rockets should be going out of their way to re-sign him. Because the Rockets basically guaranteed the final year of PJ Tucker's contract. So this past summer, there were some discussions about whether or not they would guarantee the deal and whether or not they would actually extend PJ Tucker's contract. They opted to not do that. Instead, they waited around and then they did opt to extend Eric Gordon's contract situation. So Eric Gordon's locked down for the next 4 years. But PJ Tucker, his contract's still a little bit in limbo. And that's, to me, it's a bit understandable. You have a 34-year-old guy. PJ Tucker, you know, he's got a lot of mileage on him, and now he's being expected to be your small ball center at, you know, 6'5", the whole tuck wagon lineup. But I don't know how I feel about an active player in Chris Paul and a player who, you know, just 6 months ago was a member of the team actively talking about the contract situation for an active player. I'm not sure how I feel about that. What do you think, Brian?
I think he's speaking about it because isn't he the vice president of the Players Association?
I think he's the president. He's the president and LeBron is the VP, I think.
Okay, so I think maybe that's where the angle's coming. But to actively talk about that right now, I'm not a fan of it. But I just think it goes back to him being a part of the Players Association, being the president. Do they need to extend him, PJ Tucker? I think so. The thing that comes out or that comes to mind is just the age. And they say, oh, PJ Tucker's a dog, right? Like he's your grit. He's your probably one of your best defenders. He always guards every scorer on every team. And now being in this small ball lineup, and he's going to be asked to guard bigger, you know.
The Anthony Davises, yeah, the Rudy Davises. Goberts, the Nikola Jokic's, like.
You know, if Kevin Durant was playing, he'd be on Kevin Durant, which we saw in the playoffs last year. Yeah, I mean, I would say extend him, but I would be a little hesitant to extend, for sure.
And I think that's where you get into it, is the money, I think, is the biggest concern, because, again, he is 34 years old. You know, this is going to be his last significant contract, probably. And so what are you getting out of him? Because if the plan is for him to be your starting center moving forward, you know, going into next season, he'll be 35. You know, you can only put so much wear and tear on his body before he eventually does break down. I know PJ Tucker is, you know, built like a linebacker. I know he's, you know, one of the strongest players in the NBA. But there's only so much that he can do, you know, against the bigger bodies in the league before he does eventually wear down. So I think the team needs to look for a legitimate replacement at the, you know, maybe not necessarily at the starting spot, but it needs to be somebody. And what, maybe Bruno can grow into that role and, you know, slowly take away some minutes from Tucker. Maybe Tabo Cephalosha, you know, obviously a guy who's a bit long in the tooth himself, you know, isn't going to be your next man up past PJ Tucker to take over the starting spot, but they need somebody to help ease PJ's burden a little bit. Now, the good news is this summer, they should have the full non-taxpayer MLE to be able to go out and find somebody. So maybe they can find, you know, a traditional big who can still space the floor with some three-point shooting. That way, Russell Westbrook can continue to thrive and do what he's been doing with this new version of the offense. But I think you do re-sign him. I think it's just, it's all dependent on how much money he wants. I want to let the record show, I want PJ Tucker to retire a Rocket. He really is the heart and soul of this team and has been since Paul, not what was I going to say, since Patrick Beverley has left.
I didn't realize that this is recent. Like he said, Chris Paul said these comments this past weekend.
Exactly. That's why I was, it's not breaking news and it's not necessarily hard hitting news, but it is the most relevant Rockets news that's come out of All-Star weekend.
So I pulled the quote here. And he says, quote, Tucker needs a contract extension. That's all the man want. The man play every night and can't get an extension. I feel like that's a dig at Daryl Morey. I feel like that's a little bit of shade being thrown, and I think he's still a little salty about the way that he left Houston.
I could see that.
That's so now that I saw the I didn't think this was this recent. I thought it was, you know, maybe last week or so, but this was like yesterday, day before. Like
yeah.
This article was posted 3 hours ago, the one that I'm reading. So I think it's shade thrown at Daryl Morey. Obviously, he's friends with PJ Tucker, and he's a part of the Players Association. So of course he wants fellow players to get the contract extensions they deserve, get the money that they deserve. So that I see that angle. But then when I read the quote, yeah, he's throwing a little shade at Daryl Morey. And I think he's still a little upset the way that he left Houston.
And look, you know, having Chris Paul having been here in Houston for 2 years, we became accustomed to his antics, kind of the way that he would interview, his mannerisms, just that. I think you're right. Reading the quote verbatim, hearing it, you know, exactly like that, I think it may have been a little bit of shade being thrown. But that's the Chris Paul that we, you know, fell in love with here in Houston for 2 years. You know, guy who, you know, he is a little shady at times, you know, maybe a little bit of a dirty player at times too. And those are the kind of guys you root for, those guys when they're on your team. And we rooted for him for 2 years. So
I love Chris Paul as a player, and I love the kind of dirtiness that he has, and he brought to Houston.
You need a little bit of that a championship team.
That's why I was upset when the Rockets got rid of Patrick Beverley. I love Patrick Beverley. I don't care what team he's on, I'm always going to love that guy. And I liked the tenacity that he brings. And yeah, he might be a little dirty. You know, him and Russell Westbrook have a history, but yeah, to go back to your point with that's what you need on your team. You need that. And Chris Paul had that when he was here. Obviously the injuries, we can go on and on about Chris Paul, but the grit you need, and that's what PJ Tucker brings. So that's where I'm kind of rounding it back to PJ Tucker. You need the grit. You need that defense from him. So I think you need to extend him.
If you had to build a Mount Rushmore, so you get four spots of Rockets, just gritty, you know, intense, you know, the real glue guys that bring a team together, you know, maybe borderline dirty. Who are you putting on your Mount Rushmore?
Patrick.
You can go all time.
All time?
All time, yeah.
Oh, man.
Stretch it out, because there's some names from the 90s that have got to be on there.
Well, let me kick it back to you, because you follow the Rockets a little more than I do. Obviously, it's been known that I'm more of a baseball guy. So.
All right. Now, obviously, even though I was really young during their championship runs, you know, I've gone back, I've done my research, you know, I've essentially lived through the championship run just, you know, through YouTube and watching old videos and old film. But I'm going to go Mad Max for sure.
Okay. He was one of them that I was going to say.
I've got to go Mario Elie. I want to put Shane Battier on there. I really do, but I feel like Shane's a bit too much of a nice guy to put him on there.
I mean, dude.
He doesn't have the dog in him.
No,
like
he
other
doesn't
guys
have the dog, but he was such a good defender. And there were so many times that I remember being a kid watching him guard Kobe Bryant and literally have his hand in Kobe Bryant's face every time he shot the basketball.
As soon as he was raising up for the shot, Shane Battier, picture perfect defense. I think there's some photos out there where literally his hand is like a half inch away from Kobe's nose, not fouling, but playing picture perfect. And not to mention, Shane Battier has one of the most iconic Rockets photos ever, with the blood pouring down
side of his face.
Just that photo and him like waving the refs like, stop the play. Yeah. I got hit. But I have to leave him off. I don't think that he's going to go on my Hall of Fame, or my Mount Rushmore, I should say, of Rockets defenders. So I'm not saying if it was just Rockets defenders, then obviously Hakeem would be on that list. But I'm going the gritty, you know, the glue guy defenders, not Hakeem, who's obviously one of the greatest defenders of all time. So I've got Mad Max, I've got Mario Elie, I'm going Patrick Beverley, and I'm going PJ Tucker. Like, those would be my four. Like, I'm sorry, like, those would be my four if you're going, you know, and also because of their, you know, honestly, their antics a little bit. They kind of, and PJ Tucker maybe the least of those guys, but they kind of would get in the opposing team's head a little bit. They would, you know, rile up the other team and, you know, maybe make them make some careless mistakes because of how heated they were getting during games.
I like Patrick Beverley and PJ Tucker, my top two. Vernon Maxwell is probably honorable mention right up there. And another guy, he's not on my list, but another guy that would rile people up that I really, really enjoyed watching was Rafer Austin. People forget that he was a point guard. And the reason I bring him up is because I had so many days of watching the And-One mixtape tour back in the day. And he was Skip to My Lou, right?
Skip to My Lou.
So I just remember him and Rajon Rondo would always get into it when the Celtics and the Rockets would play, back when Yao Ming was around.
Yeah.
And I just, the attitude that he brought, I loved. I know he wasn't around for, you know, five.
He had that street ball attitude.
Yeah, he had the street ball attitude. So when we talk about like gritty, dog in guys. I think he was up there with that. Obviously, he's not on my list. And then Shane Battier, for me, Shane Battier is on there.
He is. Okay.
So, and the reason I say that is because, like what we talked about, I have so many memories of the defense that he played. And his defense reminds me of PJ Tucker's, just without the grit, I get. No, he had the grit, but he's such a nice guy. I mean, like, he has like a genuine defense. Like, does that make sense? Like, he's a genuinely good defender. He's not going to play dirty.
And that's not to say that PJ Tucker isn't a nice guy. I mean, PJ Tucker is an amazing human being. He loves pancakes, like, for goodness sake. I mean, but it's just, I don't think I've ever seen, like, I don't think I ever saw Shane mean mug somebody. Right. Like, I think he was all smiles all the time, you know, really just upfront, friendly. Like, here's the funny thing to me. And I like to, this is a very weird thing, and we're taking this down some really weird tangents, but that's what we do here. Sometimes we just go on tangents. Do you ever just look at like a line, like the roster lineups on like NBA.com or ESPN or whatever, and you look at the player like headshots, and a lot of players don't smile in their photos, right?
Yeah.
A lot of players just sit there stone-faced, almost mean-mugging the cameraman. And then I'm pretty sure that I've never seen Shane do that. I think in all of Shane's player photos, he was smiling. Now, I could be wrong about this because it's been a while since I've seen a Shane Battier player photo, but I feel like he's one of the guys, the few guys in the NBA who smiled in every single one of his player photos. And so that's just the kind of guy that he was. And so I feel like it's hard to put him on a list of guys, you know, like Mad Max and Mario Ellie, you know, the Junkyard Dog, you know, those kind of guys.
Junkyard Dog is the perfect description. Shane Battier, when they won, I forgot what team he was with when they won the finals.
He was with the Heat.
With the Heat?
Yeah.
He went to Denny's to celebrate.
Really?
Yes. Like, him and his family went to like Denny's or like a kind of diner like that. That's where they celebrate. He didn't go and party. He didn't go to the club. He didn't go to a bar. He went to Denny's.
That's real. That's like 90% wholesome and like 10% like depressing, like it, just a little bit.
10% psycho is what it is,
dude,
to me.
Look, I've never there are only a few times that I've never chosen to go to a Denny's like out of like personal, like it's always been like, hey, it's like 3 a.m. and we've had too much to drink. Where are we going to go get food? Oh, there's a Denny's. But then it's like, okay, you know, let's go to the good Denny's, right? Like, not the iffy Denny's. Let's go to the one that's like decent.
Yeah, but he it was the Denny's in South Beach.
That's amazing.
It was him. I don't know who's. I just have the picture right here in front of me. But yeah, it was 100% a Denny's.
Well, we went on all sorts of a tangent there, but, you know, we'll kind of circle it back. And, you know, obviously we're talking Rockets defenders and, you know, what PJ Tucker means to this team. So I think we're in agreement. You re-sign PJ Tucker. I just think that, you know, hopefully it's not a situation like with Trevor Ariza when he left the team originally, when his contract ran out. He was asking for, I think it was like $15 million. You know, Rockets aren't going to pay PJ Tucker $15 million a year. They might not even pay him $10 million a year.
Yeah.
Like, I'd feel stretched to even say that, especially because, again, they've got to consider that they need to bring in some legitimate size, because you can't play, you know, a bunch of guys that are 6'7" and under and win a championship. I don't think it's going to happen. I would love to be proven wrong. And, you know, if they decide to prove me wrong this year, great. That'd be phenomenal. I just don't know how much I buy into it. I approve of small ball. I think it was a great move because I don't think you were doing anything with that lineup as it stood, you know, with Clint Capella, with the lack of spacing, you know, with him and Westbrook sharing the court so much. So I approve of the all-in move by Morey and by MDA to really go full small ball. But I think you got to re-sign PJ Tucker this offseason. But going into the playoffs, here's the thing. Who are you the most afraid of for the Rockets going into the playoffs?
From the entire league or just the Western Conference?
Well, let's worry about them getting out of the West.
Okay,
first,
so out of the West, the two teams that come to mind are the Nuggets and the Lakers.
All right, now, are you afraid of the Nuggets now because of the trade? Because let's face it, Clint Capella owned the Nuggets and owned Jokic for years.
For sure. That's what worries me, is Jokic is going to flourish against the Rockets. That's what the scary part is. And again, like I said earlier on the podcast, the Clippers don't really scare me much. You know, looking at the Rockets, and I know they've got Paul George, they've got why am I drawing a blank?
Kawhi Leonard.
I was going to call him the Claw. Obviously, he calls him the Claw.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think they have enough after those two guys to really get it done. I mean, Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, like, the 3X Rockets, you know, they just don't scare me. It comes to the Lakers, and it comes to the Nuggets.
They added the Morris twin. I can't ever remember which
it's
name
Marcus.
Is which. Marcus Morris. There we go. Okay, because Markieff is still in Detroit. That's
correct,
right.
Yeah.
So they have Marcus Morris now, though. So, I mean, they added a little bit of firepower.
Yeah, adding him is a big thing, but I just I don't know, off you know, just thinking about it and watching them play this year, they just don't scare me.
All right.
It's the Lakers and the Nuggets for me.
Okay. All right. Now, who would be your ideal first round matchup? Like, I guess to kind of precede that question, you know, where do we think, or where do you see the Rockets kind of landing as far as seeding is?
Seeding, I think they could. So let's see. I'm looking at the standings here in front of me. So they are 7.5 back of the number one seed.
I don't think the first seed's happening at this point.
No, I think the Lakers
are going to cruise control the first seed.
I think the Lakers will come at honestly, I could see. Man, if the Rockets can go on a run, they could get to the three seed. Where they're going to land, I think they'll be a 3 or 4 seed.
Okay.
I'm going to go 4 seed. I think it'll be the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Clippers, and then the Rockets. I think the Jazz will fall off a little bit. But then you look at the 6, 7, and the 8 seed. You got the Thunder, the Mavericks, and the Grizzlies. The Mavericks kind of – I don't want to see the Mavericks in the first round.
I don't want to see the Thunder either.
I don't even want to see them in the playoffs. Luka Doncic is unbelievable. Kristaps Porzingis is having a fantastic year. That team, they're a team that could get streaky towards the last part of the year and hit the playoffs full steam and can make it to the Western Conference Finals.
I'm right there with you. Look, Luka is the second coming of James. You know, I had a podcast earlier this season talking with Brian Zillum, who does the Blue Hardwood podcast covering the Mavericks. And he and I were in agreement about, you know, a couple different things. One, that James Harden doesn't deserve the media hate that he gets, you know, because I compared James Harden's play and Luka's play. And Luka is, you know, the golden boy of the NBA and gets no shame for the way that he plays. Meanwhile, James Harden gets nothing but flack for, you know, the quote unquote foul baiting and, you know, the style of play that he has. Luka and James Harden play the exact same way.
Identical. Exactly. Identical styles of play.
And Luka has even said that he models some of his game after James Harden. The step backs, the ball handling, the court vision, it's all reminiscent of James Harden. So, yeah, I don't want to see that, but I also really, really don't want to see a motivated, you know, vengeful Chris Paul in the first round. God, that'd be terrifying.
Yeah, you don't want to see that either.
I'd almost be content with them at this point being the fourth seed and just matching up with the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that is maybe the best possible scenario. The only downside then is that you're guaranteed to match up with probably the Lakers in the second round. And I mean, you're probably going to have to go through the Lakers to make it to the finals.
Yeah. So I kind of see the same thing that I saw last year. People were so worried that the Rockets had to play the Warriors in the second round last year. I thought it was a good thing to get that over, to get that matchup right then and there.
To try and get it over with,
to try to get them out of the way. Because if you get past them, then you should be on cruise control to get to the Western Conference or to get to the NBA championship. Now, if you go, and then I look at the standings again, the Rockets are only 3.5 games from the number two seed. So I can see them landing between 2 and 5. Where I think they'll end up, it'll be the 4 seed. Now, I would much rather see the Jazz in the first round than, let's say, a Thunder or a Mavericks team. But then again, you have to go through the Lakers. But then again, like I just said, I would much rather play the Lakers in the second round, try to get that over with. Because then after that, I mean, the West is pretty good this year. So getting to the NBA.
It's the best it's been in a long time, which is why, you know, it's not. Obviously, maybe it's not top heavy because it's just the Lakers right there up at the top. But that's why everything's so congested from 2 through 8. Now, obviously, it's 2 through 5 right now that's really tight, and then 6, 7, and 8 are, you know, or 6 and 7 are really tight. I don't have my laptop
five,
died in the middle of
five,
this. So
yeah, between 2 and 7, the Mavericks are in the 7th seed, and they are 5 games out of the 2 seed.
Yeah.
5 games is what separates the 2 seed from the 7 seed.
That's really tightly contested.
It's a very tight race after the Lakers.
But here's the thing, and we've said this before here, but the Rockets have played significantly better in the second half of seasons, and I attribute that mostly to them being a veteran team. You know, they're a veteran team that, you know, maybe, you know, at earlier points in the season, they're not playing with as much gusto, or they're kind of maybe playing their way into shape just a little bit. They're figuring things out. Obviously, the accommodation of Russell Westbrook was a big question going into the season, which I think largely that question was the number one question. How is Westbrook going to fit, and will he fit with this team? And I think they answered that. And I think that was the important part. Do you think, if you look back at these three versions of this team, so the 2 years with Chris Paul and now this version of this team with Robert Covington in, Clint Capella out, where would you rank them? And I know we have a small sample size for looking at the small ball team, but where would you rank those three versions of the team?
So the best version was CP3's first year to me.
Absolutely.
They had the pick and roll rolling. James was obviously being James, but just, and they had Trevor Ariza. I mean, just that That they should have won the NBA title that year.
They should have. They came. They were a hamstring
they
away.
They were literally a hamstring away. That team was probably one of the better versions of the Rockets that I've ever seen. And especially with the way they were playing going into the playoffs, and then obviously up until Chris Paul got hurt. And then I think back to last year's. I didn't have a lot of confidence in them in the first round of the playoffs.
Last year's team, just to put it out there, the record for this year's team, they're 34-20, you know, 54 games in. Last year's team was 32-22. So they're two games better than last year's team, and they only just recently made the shakeup that should, in my opinion, and I think yours too, is going to make this team better.
Yeah. So to rank them, obviously 2017, right?
Yeah, 17-18.
Yeah, 17-18, that's number one. This year's team so far, and I know it's a very small sample size like you mentioned, this team now I think is better than last year's team. So that's number two, and then last year's team is number three for me.
And then it just remains to be seen, you know, with obviously we need a bigger sample size, but seeing how they match up. But in the four games that they played, they beat the Lakers pretty convincingly, and I don't think the Lakers were, you know, goofing off that game. They legitimately beat the Lakers. Like, there were points where LeBron looked engaged, like he wanted to win that game, and they came out strong. And then you lose in really disappointing fashion to the Phoenix Suns, but no Russell Westbrook that game, second night of a back-to-back, kind of a schedule loss. Then a heartbreaker against the Jazz. You played really well in that game all the way up until Bojan Bogdanović hit a prayer at the end of the game. So I kind of almost don't count that loss. You know, they could very well be 3-1. And then again, you had a really strong outing against the Celtics, one of the top teams in the league at the time going into the game. They were one of the only four teams in the league with an above 700 win percentage. You know, so I think this. I'm really hopeful moving forward.
I'm very optimistic and hopeful as well. I would definitely agree with you on that. And I just think the chemistry is going to continue to grow. They're going to figure out the floor spacing. They're going to figure out how to incorporate James Harden and Russell Westbrook on the floor at the same time. It's going to take a little bit of time, though. But I think you hit the second half running. You get the momentum going. I think I'm very, very, like, back to what I said, I'm very optimistic for the second half.
All right. And I know this has been a topic between you and me. I don't think I plugged your Twitter handle once in this.
No,
I asked
you for it at the very beginning. What are we doing?
Hey, well, hey, go ahead and plug it right now.
You know,
I usually get on Locked On Rockets,
this podcast, and all of a sudden your followers start increasing. I'm looking at my follower numbers. They just stay low. They stay low. And the next thing you know, I look over at yours, and you're like at, what, 1,200 or something like that?
1,450
you're
right now.
You're at 14?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Yeah,
all right,
let's
guys,
Twitter.
Do me a favor. Please go follow Brian. Where can they follow you at, Brian?
It is BLima790. So I cover the Rockets, cover the Astros for Sports Talk 790. I'm a sports reporter, and then also on Clutch City Sunday. I fill in during the week for Sports Talk 790, covering Astros and Rockets like crazy. So, yeah, give me a follow. That'd be great.
If you guys want Houston content besides, and here's the thing, you know, Brian talks way more about, you know, Astros and Texans stuff too. You know, I'm mostly just a Rockets guy. You know, I love the other teams, I love the other sports, but I'm in depth about the Rockets. And then the other teams, you know, I do try and follow and, you know, talk about a little bit, but Brian covers everything in a much more broad spectrum. So give the guy a follow. We need to get his numbers up. There's no reason for me to have more followers than Brian.
We got to pump the numbers up.
These are amateur numbers.
And you know, when we start covering the Rockets here later on in the second half, I'll be at all the playoff games. I'll be at, you know, getting up to the playoffs, I'll be covering the Rockets a lot more. Just, you know, everything going on with the Astros, that's where my focus is now. But we love the Rockets. We're, you know.
And hey, the Rockets don't bang on trash cans.
They don't. No, they sure don't.
All right, Brian. Well, thanks so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It's about time. So thank you again.
All right, everybody. Again, go follow Brian at his Twitter handle, BLima790. I appreciate you guys listening. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. And we look forward to having you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.